Thank you, KNK listeners, for tuning in to another Weight Off Your Shoulders in my studio. Summer Rogers, a Sunday Sports Massage, and my wonderful co-host, that occasionally needs some corrective measures, Lori Spencer. And we're going to have a great conversation about sports massage and my lack of expertise, since I clearly need to be have my brain massaged at this point. So with that, we're going to go ahead and start off here. Welcome, Summer, to my studio.
Thanks for having me.
Lori, thank you for being here and helping with this this co-hosting, maybe a cohort in this case.
Yes, definitely. You are welcome.
Oh, you are most, I'm eternally grateful. Good. Now, Summer, I want to ask you, okay, so you were an athlete, performance athlete.
Not on a professional level, but keep going.
Let me extol your virtues and your abilities in history. And then you went into sports massage. Now, go ahead, tell us, where you're born and how you got into, athletics and why athletics then led to what you're doing.
Okay, so I'm from Fort Worth, Texas. I played, six sports in high school, and once I graduated, I was still really active, lifted weights. I was trying to send myself through college, paying for it myself. And how I found massage was I was trying to figure out how to work less and make more money. And I came up with bartender and waitress, and I didn't really care for the hours that entailed. And, staying up late, it just didn't. The lack of sleep wasn't appealing to me. And I happened to run into a massage therapist who was promoting herself at a Race for the Cure promotion. And she was like, oh man, I make like $40 an hour. And I was like, that's what pharmacists make. You didn't even go to college. And she's like, well, I only work 10 hours a week. And I was like, I'm going to massage school. So massage was basically my college job. I got a degree from the University of Texas in Arlington and in kinesiology. And once I graduated, I did some personal training and I applied some of the movement therapy I learned through that with my massage. And that's kind of where I'm at now. Always learning, though. So that's the story.
All right. Fantastic. And so what types of massage do you do? So like, let's say someone is, would you massage, say, a triathlete differently from a weightlifter or a swimmer or someone who plays baseball, for instance, or would they all get the same kind of treatment?
All things will be like, you're treating the nervous system first, and then if their nervous system's too frazzled to be able to sleep well and relax, then they're not going to be able to heal from whatever ails them. So it's same and different. Each sport has specific repetitive motion and movement patterns, and or have they had an accident later on, or they got in a car accident, that's going to add different things. So yes and no.
Okay. And so in other words, there is a commonality in that there's a central nervous system stimulations and there's repetitive motions, but maybe differently sequenced, and you would have to address some of those issues across particular articulations or joints for people who are like, oh, what's an articulation?
Yeah.
Okay. And Lori, I think you probably have some questions to ask.
I'm over here biting my tongue. So for the listeners, they probably do not understand like repetitive stress. So for example, if you have a pitcher,
right,
and he's pitching
hundreds
of games, and people often think, well, how come they're always blowing out their rotator cuffs?
Right.
So what would you address if you were to work with a pitcher? What would you focus on?
Assume, like, if they had shoulder issues, the shoulders often tie in with the glutes. So there might be some deep stretching on the glutes. And then you're also going to make nice space in the joint capsules of the shoulders and or the glutes. You'll always address posterior chain. You kind of look at some of their cross patterns. And then you might, during your pre, you know, when you get to know their stuff in the evaluations, they'll tell you about various other injuries, because sometimes you can have like ankle sprains that'll affect stuff upstream, you know. So it kind of depends on their history. And I always, regardless of the person I work on, I do a lot of attention to the feet, because that's your foundation. And much like a house, if your foundation is poor, you're going to get problems in other parts of the body you live in.
I'm really glad you bring that up, because foot placement, I don't know if you hear me training people, but I consider foot placement to be the key in just about every single sport. And in weightlifting, you don't have to do a lot of what I call agility mobility stuff. Nevertheless, proper foot placement is very important. And then when you take it to the next step up, where you have an agility mobility thing going on, so you're playing soccer or you're playing basketball or any kind of field oriented or court oriented sport, or if you're doing a fighting sport of some kind, you have to be able to get your feet in a proper place. And if they're not in the right spot, these little weird little asymmetries, take place, and weird muscular sequencing takes place in a person's mind to like, okay, well, I just got to get in this one particular position at this particular time so my timing is correct. And so they make a dysfunctional correction because their feet were off in the first place. And now, let's say you've got that pitcher is now in a little bit of a pickle, because now the rotator cuff may be out because the angle of their humerus or their upper arm is not correct with their shoulder. So now they start getting issues there, which can then lead to things like Tommy John surgery, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yeah.
So how would you tell someone how to mitigate those kinds of things, and not just the pitcher, but you know almost anyone who's, hey, I want to play, pick up basketball.
So if you think about, like, we're born naked without shoes on, and at a very young age they put these shoes on us and our feet don't move the way they're supposed to, and that's part of the problem. A lot of times is you have people whose arches collapse, or they just don't have good mind-muscle connection to the muscles in their feet. Your feet are supposed to give you information from your environment. And when you wear shoes that are super thick and you can't feel the ground underneath, that's part of the problem. Also, your foot's not moving the way it's supposed to be. So after I do some fascial release on the feet, which is not comfortable, I would show them exercises to do to engage their arch. Arches are oftentimes tied into the glutes as well. It has a lot to do, like in the NFL, they always check for navicular drop, and some D1 colleges will check for that. And they'll deny scholarships and or taking on an athlete if their arches collapse in such a way that the rate of ACL tears goes up. And it's like too expensive for them to invest in that athlete. So the feet, it's the foundation. So I think strengthening the feet, and then you'll start fixing things upstream. You might have less knee pain, hip pain, shoulder pain, because you're now standing better and everything, all your joints are stacked up the way they're supposed to be, or at least closer to the way they should be. I don't know if that answered your question.
No. Well, you know what? what is important, though, is that I doubt if the audience is familiar with the term navicular. Go ahead
so
and explain that.
The navicular bone, there's a lot of bones in the feet.
I think there's 38, or no, 58.
A lot.
It's like one-fourth of the bones in your body.
They say doctors who specialize in feet and hands, it's a lot more challenging than brain surgery, because there's so much
nerves
going on. Yeah.
You've got more nerve endings.
Muscles and nerves, and you can, you'll still be able to live with a messed up foot, but anyways, it's really hard. So the navicular bone is kind of in the arch, and it's important because you have this musculoskeletal tendon unit called the Houses longus, and it's responsible for your big toe to push off, like when you run and walk. And if that specific bone where the hallucis longus goes from the big toe, navicular, and then kind of crosses over the ankle and anchors into the shin, on the opposite side of your arch, anyways, if that navicular bone drops, you lose kind of, it puts more tension and wear on the knee when you're trying to do sports where you have pushing off or you're trying to cut, you know, rapidly, feet planted, you move in the opposite direction.
And that's off the ball of your foot, just so people are
Even off the heel? You still have your heel. I mean, depending on, did you land funny when you came down from something?
Okay, sure.
You could be on your heel, but you just have a greater incidence of ACL tears if that specific area in your foot or your arches are really collapsed. There are other, you know, biomechanical things that'll make you more prone to ACL tears too, but that's one of the major ones. Like, I know the NFL and D1 football programs will sometimes deny an athlete and or it, unless they can fix it themselves. So
that's fascinating. So the athlete has to fix it themselves. That's, ooh, that's tough. Now, well, Lori, you have a question or, you know, something along those lines or your own tentacle that you want to put out there?
Well, I was just really thinking when you were speaking of support, that's a whole body of work that Chris McDougall did with barefoot, mm-hmm. barefoot running, and the studies and the documentation that correlates with all of that, with muscle health and for the feet. And
you, if you do decide to start doing minimalist shoes and or some more barefoot training, work your way slowly into it, just like you would any exercise program. Because you can get super sore in your feet and be really uncomfortable. So it, just like you wouldn't go to the gym and bench press 300 pounds if you've never done it before, you don't want to go out and run 10 miles barefoot. Like, you will pay the price.
I wouldn't go run 10 miles, period.
Well,
just saying.
Me either.
Well, don't worry, you two. I actually did in 12th grade, ran an 800 for football to prove that I was in shape, and I did it barefoot to make a point.
Did you do it on the track or grass?
On the track. Oh, it basically sandblasted my feet.
Were they bleeding by the end?
Oh, yeah. Oh, they were. That season was not good.
Rubber tracks back then, or were you running on sand?
It was that long ago, E.T., that you need?
Get me out of my trilobite bed.
That wasn't very nice.
I'm waiting for the trilobite to evolve.
That's a legitimate question.
Oh, you two.
I still see sand.
So wretched. Okay.
I love that. Did they?
God.
That was brilliant.
I'm making two friends become friends. Okay.
It's a little late for that.
Yeah, it is, you know. So, no, this was probably a track that was like 10 years old at the time, I'm guessing, because I'd maybe not quite 10 years old, but they did the conversion over from what were called center tracks in the mid-60s, and almost certainly most high schools had some kind of rubberized track by the mid-70s, especially if it was a bigger school.
Now, can you tell us what happened post, like the day or two later?
Well, I did not put on my socks or shoes for, let's say, about a week. And let's just say the coach decided that...
How were the calves feeling?
Oh, my calves were fine.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah.
My calves never hurt. And I hike, in flip-flops.
Oh, that's awesome.
Okay, I don't anymore, but...
Well, at one point.
I almost died 2 weeks
ago.
So
I remember I used to run... I was a distance runner in high school. And our coach would sometimes let us run barefoot, which... to me, like, felt amazing, but I always remember my calves just almost having rhabdo, like, kind of, they were so underworked from wearing just regular shoes or worked in a different way when you switched to barefoot training that, you know, you'd kind of, the weight of your leg on the bed would be uncomfortable. So that's why I ask.
Well, I've always been very good at jumping rope. I went into boxing later on, so my calves have never ever had any kind of trouble. Achilles tendon, yes. Weird problems in my feet here and there every 3 or 4 or 5 years, yes. But and that was a structural issue, but never my calf muscles. They've always been pretty dieseled out.
See, what I'm thinking as a female, mm-hmm. when you, or depending too on the amount of heel that you had on that right. shoe, that changes your calf structure.
Absolutely. And the inch thick rubber on it.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you, like me, for example, I never wore gym shoes.
Right.
Even when I was in high school, I did not like them. So I would go barefoot. And I've always been a heel girl until mm-hmm. I moved to Colorado. and because you can't really wear heels
right.
like I normally wear. So when you make that transition, it ends up, it changes your strike.
Yeah, your mechanics.
Your gait heel strike. Your heel gait strike.
And the interesting thing is, did anybody ever teach you, like, hey, when you run, this is exactly, like, this is what you're doing, but maybe you could make it better a grade school or a very early age or even walking? Because if you look at children now, with technology and everything, they've got that forward head position because they're looking at their cell phones and their pads and or reading, or the desk is in the wrong position for the chair for their specific need. You see a lot of kids with their toes splayed out, which also isn't great on the knees or the toe joints. I see a lot of my clients have bunions on their feet and they walk kind of duck-toed. So when I see that, I always ask them, have you always walked like this? Or it might just be one leg that does that. But I'm always interested because a lot of times no one ever showed them at a younger age, like, hey, you should, this is how you walk and this is the best way to sit down. And, you know, try not to roll forward on your desk and bring your cell phone up to eye level instead of looking down at your hands. And your body will be a lot happier with you and you'll build up those good habits. But it seems so simple, but it doesn't seem to happen very much.
Well, in those antiquated days, wise guys, well, in those ancient days, you didn't have a lot of filming and technical analysis of gait. It was just, you know, you go out there and you would run your distances. You would run your repeated distances depending on the events that you're running. So if you're running, like, the 2 miles, a common distance run in high school, I think it's the longest one that you do in high school. If you were doing something like that, it was like, okay, just go hit the roads. We'll see you in a couple hours.
All day.
Yep. And yep, exactly. And that was something, that's something now that McDougal and Tarahumara, Indians out of Copper Canyon, they find that those people and the Maasai Mara they run on the balls of their feet barefoot.
Right.
And that is much healthier. The best distance runners in the world are coming from those traditional areas where they are, they have unshod feet and they have a kind of like a running culture. Mm-hmm. And by the time you get to the 1970s, when I was in high school, if you're a sprinter, you were doing, you know, a series of much shorter distances. You're taught to run on the balls of your feet, but that was all there was to it. Here are your spikes. Mm-hmm. Now go run.
Right.
And then that was it. What was your time? Thank you very much. You need your time to be X at this distance and Y at that other distance. And that was pretty much it. Now, later on with the ability for people to easily film things going on, you could have slowed down analysis, gait analysis, foot strike angles, you know, whether someone's coming off the inside of their foot or rolling their strikes over on their smaller toes towards their pinky toe instead of coming off the hallux or the big toe. And so those are kinds of things that could be addressed today that were not being addressed easily in the 1960s. So some of those runners back then would actually have better performances today simply because they could have better technical analysis of their gait and foot strikes, stride length, as well as frequency.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
or if they have a really good eye, because that's how I was trained.
Yeah.
Right.
We would sit and watch people with, you know, there was a guy that I studied under, Evan Ossar, who is brilliant with functional weight training or functional
movement,
exercise physiology, movement, kinesiology. And we would just hang out on the streets of Chicago and watch people walking. And he'd say, well, what do you think about their gait? What are they doing?
And from looking at that, you can tell oftentimes what muscles aren't working right. You know, maybe they've got like, ooh, are you having pain in your hip? Why? Like you're kind of limping a little bit. And they won't even realize it until you ask them and they have to pause and, well, I guess it is kind of been sore for a while. But you kind of get used to the pain you have. If it's not a really high-grade pain, it just becomes normal. So
that's our conditioning, though.
Yeah. And in a sit-down culture, like Colorado people, you know, probably move more than most non-mountain areas.
Way more.
Yeah. So y'all get a lot more standing time, but the body's not meant to sit at 90-degree angles for, you know, 6 to 12-plus hours a day.
Yeah, probably.
From kindergarten through college or planes, trains, automobiles, we're just stuck in 90s. So I'm also a big fan of, you know, you look at the feet and then you get a healthy range of motion back in your ankles, knees, and hips. And that'll oftentimes affect, like, just the lack of ankle mobility hugely affects squat range of motion.
Okay. And all right. So you've mentioned glutes, and I've talked to you in the gym a few times about the glutes. And just briefly, why are the do you see the glutes as something that are, because they're so close to the center of gravity of a person, that's where, and it's also the most massive muscle or greatest amount of muscle mass in the human body and located near the center of gravity? Do you think that's one reason why glute activation or lack of activation or asymmetric activation could be a problem, creating another row of dominoes for other issues, you know, that cascade down from that?
Yeah. So if you have really underactive glutes, a lot of times it'll change the structure of your pelvis.
Mm-hmm.
It might cause your tailbone to kind of tuck under, and you'll see people walk around like that. I personally have a little bit of scoliosis, so I have trouble activating both of my glutes evenly. So that's always been a struggle for me personally, but I'm working on it every time I go to the gym and trying to get your body loves to be symmetric.
Props for you doing incredibly well with the situation that you're in. Just absolutely double thumbs up on that. Seriously. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I mean, it shows. So keep up the good work from my personal trainer perspective. And I want the audience to have an idea of how do we reach you? How do we reach Summer Rogers?
Well, I can be emailed at athleticrecoveryspecialist@gmail.com. And I'm working on a website, but it's not live yet, so I don't want to give it out. Or I could have y'all post a phone number.
This will all be archived, so everything we're saying here will be archived for posterity.
So go with the Gmail address.
Okay. So, go ahead and repeat that.
athleticrecoveryspecialist@gmail.com.
Do you have a business number that you could be a preferred number for someone to call in?
Or? I don't want to be overwhelmed by too much.
Okay.
So let's just do the emails, and I can call
I've
you back
got a
and
secret.
Respond.
By the way, I can be blackmailed into silence, you know, or, you know, you can pay me off. I promise to be quiet. How's that?
Yeah.
All right, Lori, we got about 45 seconds left. A quickie question with a yes or no probable answer.
No, I don't really have any the yes or no. I don't really have any yes or no questions.
All right. Well, you could. Okay. Am I old?
Yes.
Okay. See there.
But you look good for your age.
Oh, thank you, Summer. You get a
he
double.
Looks
you
better
get
than most 20-year-olds.
Double extra hug. Oh, my ego is really tiny.
No more ego. We have any calls?
All right, folks. We are about to end our show. We have Pulse of the Planet coming up, and. Thank you all for listening.
Program from our archives.
In the next few minutes.